Welcome to the Northern Geeks podcast. Today is our first official podcast. I'm here with my good friend Darren, who we all know as Gib Geezer in the strip.
Hey, folks.
As you probably know, I am JF. I'm the Geekbot character in the strip. So I think you know a little bit about us, but we also have another guest with us today. Well, guest. He's going to be a permanent addition until, you know, he decides that we're all a bunch of crazy people and he doesn't want to stick around anymore. Brian.
Hi. I host my own podcast called Bleeding Pixels. Me and my girlfriend do that podcast. I guess that's kind of how you guys found me, is through Bleeding Pixels.
It's a really great podcast. If you can give the URL.
Oh, it's just casualmurder.net/bleedingpixels. So, if you just go to casualmurder.net, there's links to it.
Right. And Brian was like, you know, he was saying that that's how we sort of met him. But it's a little bit more interesting than that, actually, because Darren is an instructor at the electronic game design course in Miramichi, in New Brunswick, where we're from. And Brian's actually a student of his right now. So it's sort of funny because I was a student of Darren's several years ago, and that's how we met. And now we met Brian through the program the same way. So it's kind of interesting how this is all sort of falling together over time.
Darren's apparently a pretty popular guy.
Yeah.
It
ruggedly
sort of
handsome
makes
as
sense
well.
When you're dealing with things that deal with video games, you know, get what, 40-some students probably in every year.
Yeah.
All who are, you know, rabid fans of video games.
Yeah.
Most of them, well, I should say all, most of them are very hardcore gamers, is how they describe themselves.
Yeah.
So, I've been doing it for 14 years, so there's quite a network out there.
Yeah, you've got a lot of subtle connections here and there.
Some of which we may try to make use of in the future, right?
That's the only reason he's here.
Yes, we don't care about the person. We just want his connections. Once we form the alliance with the other people, we can get rid of him. I mean, it's our first time doing the podcast, so I hope you're a little lenient on us. If there's any questions you want to ask us, we'll be giving out an email address later on towards the end of the podcast. And we'll talk a little bit more about the forums and how there'll be a section there where you can go and discuss the topics of the podcast. So that'll come a little bit later. First, I'd just like to everyone do a quick little check-in and see what everyone's been playing lately. How about you?
Starting with me?
Yeah. I'm looking
starting
at you.
Starting with the guy with way too many games on his plate right now. It's that time of year. I think there's probably...
Well, it's like the appetizers to the meal, right? You're giving us a little bit of everything.
Like I said, you know, there's probably a lot of people in the same boat. It's all the game companies save their games and drop them on us all at once for the Christmas season. So October and November are atrocious. Everybody's saving their pennies and going, oh man, I got to buy this game and I got to buy that game, but there's this other game that looks really cool and somebody showed me this other game that I hadn't even been thinking about, and it's like, where am I going to get $60 for that? And I've bought too many games already, so I'm playing little bits of this and little bits of that, and right now I'm playing at the same time Far Cry 2, which I hadn't even intended to buy, but somebody brought in and showed me, and I said, oh, that looks so pretty. I had to pick it up. So I'm playing it, and I'm playing Fallout 3 because I couldn't stop myself from popping that in and trying it out. And it's just going to get worse next week.
Yeah, you haven't even touched Fable 2 yet.
Yeah, I've got Fable 2.
And you're saying little bits of this and little bits of that, but you haven't touched Little Big Planet either, which, interestingly enough, you don't have a PS3 yet, but that may change.
That may change, because Little Big Planet might be the game that actually makes me change that. I don't know. So far, there's only been a couple of other games I've been interested in on the PlayStation 3, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm against getting a console for two or three games. Got a Wii, got an Xbox 360, and, you know, had all of the generation before that consoles, and I have all the handhelds, and I've been multiples of them, and so on. Got lots and lots and lots of consoles laying around the house, and but haven't gone with the Sony one yet, just because the only game that was out for it that was exclusive to it was Metal Gear Solid 4 that I was really interested in. There's Resistance Fall of Man, and I played some Resistance, and it's okay. I'll be frank, you know, I think that all the hype over Resistance is because PS3 owners don't have other games to play. You know, it's a good game and everything.
I just met over what Resistance. It was okay. It didn't do anything.
Are you a first-person shooter person?
I can be.
Yeah.
It depends.
I thought it was a good first-person shooter. It was really well done. But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really, to me, it wasn't quite a BioShock. It wasn't quite a Gears of War. It wasn't quite a Halo or a Call of Duty. You know, it was good, though. It was almost as good as those. But it just was maybe a little short. And as such, it wasn't a console seller for me. So Metal Gear Solid 4, that's one I would like to get the console for, maybe.
Yeah,
Little Big Planet. Now, there's something really unique and original, and I got to play with it myself and see. But there, that might be one that sells a console, maybe.
Yeah, and I mean, I can completely agree, because that's why I ended up getting the PS3. I got it because of Metal Gear Solid 4, and, you know, I don't regret having bought the PS3 for that reason. But, you know, when you add it all up in your mind, and you're like, wow, this game cost me essentially $500, you know, you're sort of like holding your breath, hoping that something else is going to come out.
How many other PS3 games you got?
I have 2 PS3 games right now that I own. Like I said, Metal Gear Solid 4, because that came, I got the bundle with the console and the game. I recently picked up Resistance, because that was one of the games that, like you said, was sort of being hyped as one of the big PS3 titles. And picked it up cheap because it's been around for a while now, and I hadn't played it, and a friend of mine and I wanted to play it. You know, it has co-op, which to me is a really big, you know, game seller. But I don't know, there was something about the controls that didn't quite feel right to me. It felt a little loose. And mind you, I was playing on a small monitor, and I hated when, like, we, you know, do split screen on a smaller TV. And maybe it was just
You were at your friend's house, were you?
I was at my friend's house. Yeah. I have a really nice big TV. But anywho. Anyway, yeah, so it really didn't do it for me, and I'm sort of wondering how Resistance 2 is going to be, if it's going to be better, it's going to be much of the same. But in any case, for me right now, the whole PS3 is basically Metal Gear Solid 4 and Little Big Planet, which I just picked up and haven't played yet. But Brian here has played a bunch of Little Big Planet.
I've probably put I put more after I got home last night. I probably put another like 5 hours into it. I've just been playing the crap out of that game. I bought Eternal Sonata for the PS3 because it just came out for the PS3 as well a week before. I put 5 hours into that, and then I got Little Big Planet, and I don't know if I'm going to get time to go back to Eternal Sonata anytime soon. And I'm actually passing on 3 or 4 more games that I really want right now, just because I know that it's not worth it to just waste all my money on them right now, and I'm not going to play them later anyway.
Exactly. You know, I was probably stupid buying Fable 2.
Yeah.
And I want to play Fable 2. I like Fable 1. I'm sure I'll like Fable 2. I can ignore all the Molyneux hype and so on quite easily, and just and enjoy the Fable games as decent RPGs, and not worry about the fact that they never live up to their hype.
Yeah.
But I was stupid to buy it. You know, JF was pointing that out. I should have just waited and picked it up cheap, because I won't get around till like winter or something, probably.
Yeah.
With the release schedule being the way it is.
And it's interesting. I'm a lot, like, I'm kind of tempted to buy some games, because the games I'm tempted to buy are the ones that have online. Because games, when they have online, if you don't get them right away, I find that when you eventually do get around to them, the community's not nearly as good as when they first come out. So Little Big Planet was kind of on my priority list. That's not even close to why, but it was just a game I've been waiting years for since they first showed it. But like Fallout 3, I actually really want to get BioShock, because I haven't played it, because I don't have a 360. I really want to get Valkyria Chronicles, which is coming out in a couple of days, which looks like an awesome strategy RPG. I really want to get Mirror's Edge. I played the demo of it, and that's... it's a game. It's probably the top of my list right now of games I want to get. It was really, really good demo.
Yeah, I played the demo last night.
It was shockingly
good. And that's another thing that's sort of on my list. Not only am I playing games, but then I'm playing demos for these games that are coming out and so on. And, you know, some of them are really good, some of them are really bad. We played the Tomb Raider demo last night. That was awful.
Oh, was it bad?
It's awful.
I wanted that game to be good. I wanted it to be like the first Tomb Raider.
No, it was really bad because we played Mirror's Edge first.
And
Mirror's Edge, the controls are tight. It's really slick. You know, it takes a little getting used to, but it doesn't take very long. And you're doing all these neat moves of sliding under pipes and hopping over things and so on, and it really, really is tight.
Yeah.
And then you play Tomb Raider, and it's, you know, you're jumping off in directions you don't want to go and falling and having to repeat your climb all over again, and it's really, really, and jerky motion, and, you know, yes, you can get lots of camera angles of Lara Croft's cleavage, but that really isn't doing anything for me.
I would appreciate games like that more if they didn't have crap like that in there.
And I was 13.
Yeah.
No. yeah. But yeah, it's, like I said, it didn't really help that, you know, we played Mirror's Edge right before. Because, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Tomb Raider games. I think they're all right for what they do. And but I think they, you know, they've been around for a while now, and they've sort of lost their appeal over the ages, you know, well, over the years. And
the first ones are really good. Like, the first Tomb Raider was awesome, in my opinion.
And the second one was really good. Yeah. And I like the first two.
Then it just went completely downhill. But then supposedly the people that I've talked to about it, when they did, what was the last one called, Legends?
Mm-hmm.
They did a really good job, like, a quote-unquote really good job on it. And then they did another one, and now they're doing this one. And those developers apparently do it well, but
wasn't Legends,
not well enough.
But wasn't Legends just a remake of the first one? Because I didn't play it.
I didn't play it either. I don't know.
Well, if anyone knows, if it is in fact the case, at the end of the podcast, we'll be sending, we'll give you an email so you can go ahead and tell us.
Tell us what idiots we are, because we don't like the new Tomb Raiders.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
None of us, I think, do.
No. But I was shocked. My friend, interestingly enough, I chose not to play the Little Big Planet beta. I had a chance to get it, and I had a code. I didn't use it. Because I'm at this point right now where I'm like, if it's a game I know I want, I'm not going to spoil myself.
Right.
I don't want to spoil the experience. I really miss not knowing anything about a game before I play it. Because in our current, like, internet technology, information age, whatever, you know everything about a game before you get it, really.
You can watch 3 hours of videos on game trailers sometimes before you ever get the game. You
know? Yeah, it's ridiculous. And I'm like, well, I'm Little Big Planet, I don't want to spoil it. I want to wait, and when I get it, it'll make it all that
because
much better.
Because I don't want to ruin its awesome story.
Well, the single player is really good. It's mostly what I've been playing. It doesn't necessarily have a story. No,
but speaking of stuff that, you know, we don't want to spoil for ourselves, like, I have been trying very, very hard not to look at any type of information on Fallout 3 before it came out.
Yeah, same here.
There was tons of information out there, and like I said, I'm curious enough to the point where I was thinking about it, but like I said, I knew that I was going to really, really like this game, and I really wanted to play it, that I figured I just want to avoid the whole thing and have it all fresh when I sit down and play it. And I have just been loving that game. It's I'm about 40 hours into it now, and it's funny because I feel like when I look at the world map, if you divide the whole thing like in a 4-panel grid, I've mostly been running around like the bottom right corner. And like I said, I'm already 40 hours in, and I've only got like a quarter of the map explored.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's tons of stuff in that quarter that I still haven't found.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when I started one of the first missions, I ran into another character, which, you know, gave me a few missions to do, and it ended out that in order to help this person out, I needed to get to the very far right, bottom right corner of the map, and I was in Megaton, which is the first town, and like I said, just getting to that, from that distance, from like the middle of the map to like the bottom right, and took me like almost all 40 hours,
yeah,
because there was all this stuff that kept me from getting there. I get sidetracked, and even like I find like, oh well, like there's this, you know, town I can't go through. I have to go through these underground subway stations, and I had to figure out how to get to that place. And it took me a while before I actually got to this town. This was like one of the first missions I got,
yeah,
and it took me forever. So this game is huge.
Yeah.
If you really liked Oblivion, I think you'll find there's a lot similar to Oblivion. But there's also a different feel because, you know, it being post-apocalyptic instead of fantasy. And
the VAT system, the combat system.
The VAT,
you know,
system
is different.
It works really well, I find. I mean, there's ways of taking advantage of the system, but, I mean, that's fine. I mean, if the system allows you to do certain things, then you can take advantage of it. To me, there's no big deal there. But plus, the other big thing I found that was really nice is where Oblivion had... most of the quests were around guilds, so you do the mage guild quest and you do the fighter guild quest. The quests in Fallout 3 seem to be more natural. They seem to be, you know, spread out differently, so you meet more different people that have things they need to have done for them.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it has much more of a natural feel, which I think is interesting. I like both systems, but like I said, this is especially nice, I think, the way they did it.
You can tell it still has that freedom of moving around, because I have a setup at home, and Jeff was staying overnight at my place last night, and I have this setup at home with, like, the children's den is sort of next to the kitchen, And they, my son has a 360 there, and he was playing Fallout 3. And so we're in the kitchen, and we look over sort of the couch and see him playing. And he's only 2 hours into the game, but, you know, he's already doing things that JF is just getting to after 40 hours in the game, because my son took a different direction and is doing things a little different way.
It's just
like the classic with Oblivion, you know, where some people follow the main story and some people just sort of, instead of turning left, they turn right.
Yeah. Right. And that's another thing, like, once again, I'm only 40 hours into the game. Well, only.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny when you say that. I'm only 40 hours into the game. But one of the other things I think is really nice is there isn't an equivalent to the go around closing all the gates thing, which...
That was the only thing in Oblivion I didn't like.
Right, same
which
here.
Was the main storyline and involved the gates, and I really didn't like them. The worlds inside them were boring and uninteresting.
Right.
And they themselves were sort of a blot on the landscape. I liked this fantasy land, this world that they created out there, and I just wanted to sandbox around in it and do little quests in it and so on and really live in that world. And the gates were just, like I said, a blight on the landscape.
Well, they were really repetitive. They were really repetitive. And, you know, it's like, well, I'm going to go into this gate. I'm going to get to the top of the demon guy's castle, and I'm going to kill the demon guy, seal the gate, and then I'll leave.
And then rinse and repeat.
And like I said, there may be something like this down the road with Fallout 3, where it's like, you got to go and shut down reactors or something. I don't know, but at least at this point in time, it doesn't seem like that sort of indication, which is great.
I'm actually a little curious. Have either of you guys ever played the Fallout 1 or 2?
And that's the other thing, too, which I think is important to point out. I know of the other games. I did not play the other games.
I played the demo for Fallout 1 and didn't like it. and that comes down to it had a very bad demo, which was glitchy and buggy, and I managed to totally break it like 17 different ways, and I just said, oh, I'm not going to play this. And everybody afterwards said, oh, you missed out on a really great game because of a bad demo. That's probably what happened. I played Fallout Tactics.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it, but I played it a lot in multiplayer with other people.
Yeah. Right, but that's a different feeling.
Yeah, it's a totally different thing.
I'm just curious because I know a lot of people, when Bethesda took over the Fallout franchise, a lot of people are just like, because Bethesda's kind of said it's going to be like Oblivion with guns. Because that's, and all of the Fallout fans are like, we really didn't want that.
Right.
Because they felt they were just going to butcher their series, right? They're going to butcher the franchise and just make it Oblivion with guns. So I was just kind of curious if, like, you played the other ones and knew if it's not that
feeling. Well, what made it worse for them, I think, is because they had already started working on a Fallout 3. Like, there was a Codename project, something which I don't remember on top of my head because, like I said, I haven't played the first two. So I wasn't really a big Fallout guy necessarily before they announced Fallout 3, because I was like, yeah, Oblivion with guns. To me, that, you know, worked. and I can understand, you know, especially, you know, because it was an isometric game. If you're a fan of Fallout 1 and 2, this might have been like a big drastic change, and I can relate. And I'd be interested in hearing if, you know, if anyone who was a big Fallout fan, you know, who played 1 and 2, who has, you know, played the third one, if they do enjoy it, or if they really feel that, you know, making it a first-person / third-person game really takes away from the feeling, or if they find it's, you know,
I don't think you
out.
Can really say it's a third-person game. Got to state that, too.
Well, no, and that's why I
third
said...
Third-person, man. Yes. It was obviously not meant to be that. You just skate and float around, and it looks awful.
And you're walking, nuts.
You're moonwalking backwards and stuff, and it's... but in first-person, it's great. And it's obvious that third-person's just sort of tacked in there and doesn't belong.
Right. Well, it's like I was giving Brian an example last night. It's you can play Metal Gear Solid 4 all in first-person, but...
It's really not meant to be played that way.
Yeah. It definitely feels like it was something they put there for people who would prefer that, but there's not that much effort into it, I feel. And definitely Fallout 3 is a game to be played as a first-person game.
Yeah, and that sucks because I wanted to play it as a third-person game.
Yeah, and I don't know how it really fits in with Fallout 1 and 2, but it's a great game on its own as a standalone.
Yeah, that's what's important, whether or not...
Well, that's what's important to me. I'm sure there's Fallout fans out there that are just, like, tearing their hair out right now.
Yeah,
but I think it's great.
Even if you're a fan of a franchise, you still got to be able to appreciate a game for what it is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know there was the same sort of uproar, although it might not have been as big when they made a new Banjo-Kazooie game. because
right, yeah,
you know, nuts and bolts, and
yeah,
he really wanted more of a classical platformer and none of the sort of make your own little buggy thing, and which I think is kind of neat. But once again, I wasn't a big Banjo-Kazooie guy, so I can't really relate. But
and I really do appreciate the other Banjo-Kazooie games. I really liked them on the N64, but I have no idea, having just played the demo of Banjo-Kazooie, Nuts and Bolts, and not having read much about it and so on, I'm not sure what it's really going to play out. Like, the graphics are really beautiful, really nice. You were saying that last night, you know, you really have to appreciate that they did this neat stylistic thing with the graphics, and they're old school N64 sort of looking graphics, but completely not. You know, they're current generation,
yeah.
They're very detailed, very nice, but it fits the Banjo-Kazooie universe and the
yeah.
characters and the art design that they had all along. So it's really great. And in fact, you know, you commented when you saw it, you said, well, I'm not really into Banjo-Kazooie, but boy, I wish, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking they could redo Mario World 64 and do the update the graphics like this with all the detail and so on. That would be cool.
Yeah, I would love for them to just remake, you know, a Mario 64, but just with those sort of graphics. You know, I like Sunshine, and I like Galaxy. I think Galaxy was a great game. But, you know, I'd really like to see them go back a little bit more old school with Mario. You know, sometimes it's good that they do change and sort of, you know, add new mechanics to the game, which is great. Like they're doing with Banjo and Kazooie, for instance. But, you know, sometimes it's nice to go back.
Certainly, the demo of Banjo-Kazooie, the vehicle-making part, is fun. Like, it's very inventive.
Mm-hmm.
You can...
Is it easy to use? Is it very
it's easy
simple?
To use. It's very simple. It's, what was the word? You talked about, like, gummy ships for cars or
yeah,
something.
Yeah,
and actually important to gameplay, unlike the gummy ship. You know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Could,
we were saying yesterday...
You could totally ignore the gummy ship, you know.
Yeah,
it
in
nothing.
Kingdom Hearts, we sort of yeah. wish that the gummy ship was more like what they're doing in Banjo-Kazooie.
Well, it's actually really funny. I spent a lot of time making my gummy ships look really cool, because I really dug it. And my friend came and he's like, you should just make a gummy ship that's all guns, just a wall of guns and power supplies. Because you can, right? And I did, and it was the best gummy ship ever. It
yeah.
destroyed everything. It got S's on all the levels. And it just it crushed me a little on the inside.
No, the Banjo-Kazooie vehicle creation is more in-depth and complex, and there's more types of parts that actually are important, like to the way the car works and so on. And looks like a lot of fun. And I'm not saying, you know, I just played the demo. I'm not saying that it might not be broken. Maybe you'll find that making a cart that's all egg guns and propellers works really well or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it does look to me a lot cooler, more interesting, and have a lot more effect on gameplay. Because frankly, if on the gummy ship, it really didn't matter what you did with the gummy ship. You could get through the levels. And
yeah.
Maybe you didn't get the S level or whatever.
Yeah.
Who cares?
It was just kind of, especially in the first one. In the second one, the levels were actually fun, but they didn't affect anything.
Yeah. All right, so I think that takes care of what we're playing right now. How about we move on to our next segment, the news, you know, what we, you know, feel is important or interesting to talk about. I don't figure that we're going to bring anything really, you know, groundbreaking to the news section. You know, probably by the time we hear of something, you'll have heard of it, and, you know, because we don't have any contacts yet, and I'm looking at you, Mr. Skidgeezer.
My guys all sign NDAs.
Yeah.
They don't tell me anything.
Ah, well, maybe we'll be around that someday, maybe. But for the moment, yeah, we'll mostly be reporting on stuff that we heard of and, you know, our impressions. So let's go with that.
Okay.
I think we need to employ Northern Geek Ninjas.
Northern Geek Ninjas. I like that.
That way we can get contacts.
Yes. All right, so... something I recently heard about and I find is interesting is the Beatles, the new Beatles game that is being worked on by the same people who do Rock Band. And I always mix up Harmonix and Red Octane, but I believe it's Harmonix.
Harmonix does Rock Band.
Right.
I looked it up.
Thank you. Like I said, I just always mix those up for some reason. No offense to anyone. And it's really interesting because I don't particularly think that making a separate Beatles game is necessarily the best way to go about it. It's very similar to the...
Apple Corps has never seemed to figure out the best way to handle the Beatles digitally. They've constantly dropped the ball on that one. At least they are licensing it for Rock Band, and they're going to do something with it, thank God. You know, it's about time. But they blew the whole thing with iTunes. Why the Beatles catalog isn't on iTunes is a mystery to everybody in the world except Apple Corps.
The reason that started was because Apple got its Apple Corps was around first, and Apple was like, we want to use this trademark name, Apple. And they're like, you can't, as long as you do not sell music using Apple, using that name. And then the iTunes store came out, and there was a huge lawsuit tiff over it about of the Beatles and Apple Corps fighting Apple for selling music. And that's why you'll never see the Beatles on iTunes, because they greatly offended them personally.
You know, at some point, they just got to be businessmen and put all that behind themselves.
You just got to suck it up.
We're missing the boat here. We've got the Beatles catalog, and everybody's downloading pirated MP3s because they can't buy our music off iTunes, and we're just losing out. You know, why aren't we selling our music on iTunes? Come on, get over it, guys. Right. But anyway, you know, and now they've at least licensed their music to Harmonix and to MTV, and we're going to see something.
And they say it's not going to be like a Rock Band game. It's going to be something else, but it's going to be similar to a Rock Band game, which to me almost sounds like all it is it's going to be a Rock Band game, but it's not going to have the Rock Band name on the title.
Is it going to kind of be like Guitar Hero Aerosmith, but without the Guitar Hero there? Like that kind of game?
That's what we're imagining.
Yeah, well, it'll be the same thing again, you know, where Guitar Hero Aerosmith, which is a Guitar Hero game, which is all Aerosmith music.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that it's going to be, you know, Rock Band, but it's just going to be all Beatles music. And once again, I have to imagine that a bunch of Beatles fans are probably going to be really happy about this, and a bunch of copies are going to sell.
Yeah.
But I would have figured it would have just worked better had they just sold the rights to the music and Rock Band had the downloads for the you know, Beatles music. And I figured they would have sold much more that way than making it a separate game.
Yeah, a lot of people are much more willing to drop like $5 for a pack of songs than $60 for a new game.
Exactly.
Well, and even if they had have just sold it as... I think they could have sold a $60 pack... as long as it was marketed as like a Rock Band add-on, but selling it as a separate game, even if it totally integrates with Rock Band, if it doesn't have the Rock Band name there, I think they're missing out.
Yeah. You know, okay.
But anyway, it's Apple Corps and the mysteries of them and their marketing decisions. They make some strange ones.
Yeah, and it's also interesting. Like, I think it was Motley Crue released a new track on Rock Band. They released it on Apple and they released it on Rock Band at the same time, and it sold twice as much on Rock Band than it did on the iTunes store. And I think that says something about like the current about who's buying like the songs. If you're gonna if you can buy it and play it, or buy it and just listen to it, a lot of people who have Rock Band will want to buy it and play it, so they'll buy one copy instead of the other.
And it's too bad that they can't work it out where you can download a song for Rock Band or Guitar Hero World Tour or whatnot, and be able to play it and listening to it, you know, because that would make the purchase so much, you know, more interesting, in my opinion.
How much are songs for Rock Band and Guitar Hero? Are they 99 cents?
I think a little more than that. But
the cheap ones are 80 points. The more expensive ones are they 120 or 160 points? I don't even really pay attention. I just buy them.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because it's those points, right? You know, you don't sit there and do the math. Well, so many points is so many dollars. It's like math points. It's like virtual money. I can spell it as much as I want. And oops, the end of the month, you look at the credit card bill, and you're like, ooh.
I think it comes up to about $2.
Yeah, because I'm kind of interested. Like if iTunes was smart, if Apple was smart, they would start making it so that you could download stuff on the iTunes store and play it in Rock Band. Like, I kind of see that would be, because they have a huge library, right? If they could start working with Harmonix and the people who make Guitar Hero and getting, like, those licenses out,
Right. Come on, people. Start talking to each other. Get something
or
going
like
on.
Vice versa. So you, like you said, so you can listen to the songs you download in Rock Band
right.
without having to play them.
Yeah. And I mean, especially on the Microsoft end of things, you know, if you're like talking about the 360, you know, I see marketing possibilities for them in their Zune, right? It's like, well, you put the songs on the Xbox, you put it on your Zune, you take off, you listen to music, you get back, you play the song. You know, there's something there that could work,
yeah.
I have to imagine. But, you know, maybe in the future, who knows? We're not the people in charge.
Well,
so
it was interesting. There was a statement, and I can't remember the fellow's name. He was one of the heads of Harmonix, I believe, talking about how they pay money to license these songs, and he's pointing out how they're every, you know, when a song gets included in Rock Band, it winds up selling a lot and making a lot of money for the artists. And he said, you know, we've been paying them money to put the titles on our games. I'm starting to think
and
maybe they should be paying us money.
It's free advertising, basically.
It's big advertising.
Yeah.
It's, you know, how many, you know, really, Dragon Force. It's not that Dragon Force was an unknown band or anything, but their fan base was pretty small before Guitar Hero.
It's a very good point, because I mean, think how many copies of Rock Band and Guitar Hero are out there right now.
Yeah, and more people, like the bands, are getting in on it, because like we said, there was Guitar Hero Aerosmith, now the Beatles are doing one, and there's another really interesting title I find is there's a Rock Band track pack that's coming out. It's live AC/DC. And the funny thing, or the interesting thing, is that it's going to be sold exclusively at Walmart and
Sam's,
which is interesting, because you're sort of wondering, I guess people who shop at Walmart are big AC/DC fans, or big AC/DC fans shop at Walmart.
I you know what, probably that's it. That's exactly,
you know,
it. Walmart's very savvy about who their customer base is. I mean, that's where Deer Hunter came from.
Right.
If you're talking video games, it came from a Walmart manager talking to some developers and saying, you know, if you've made me a game about deer hunting that I could charge $20 for, I have a market for that. I have people coming into my store, and I could sell a lot of copies of that. And that was a totally original idea. Nobody had thought of that as a market before. And the people at Walmart knew their customers. And I got to think that they know how many copies of AC/DC albums they're selling back in their electronics department. And they said, you know, those people, we could sell them a Rock Band game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very smart. And it's interesting, you know, AC/DC, just like the Beatles, there's another band that licensing of the electronic rights of their material has been a little iffy. Not as bad as the Beatles, but still, they've been slow, you know, to license their products out there, and now they're jumping in with both feet and throwing the kitchen sink at it and everything. Those are like 60 songs or something in this
pack. Exactly.
You know, 60 songs. That's a
but
lot.
It sort of leads me to wonder which other band is going to come out and do this sort of thing in the future. Is there like a band you would like to see do this sort of like large track pack? You know, buy the disc and it has like 30 or 40 songs and it's like a track pack for Rock Band or Guitar
Hero.
Sure.
I don't think it's going to happen for the bands I want. But then again, you never know. Another band that's been very, very little bizarre about their marketing and rights and so on is King Crimson. I really like King Crimson. And I'd love to see them do it. But, you know, it's not a big name mass market band like AC/DC or the Beatles. But then you look at Rock Band, we've got Grateful Dead 9-track set, and I give them total props for that. That they've gone out and found a band like the Grateful Dead and go, well, you know, these guys aren't very mainstream, but they're interesting, and let's put that music on there for people that might be into that. And Rock Band's got certainly a great collection of music, a lot of genres, a lot of styles. They're really far-ranging. They found some great stuff. They've got the Buzzcocks on there. You know, I didn't know anybody but me had ever heard of the Buzzcocks. They really reached out there for some of their material, and that's great. Far more than Guitar Hero.
Right. It's interesting because even before you started mentioning band names, I first band that came to my mind was King Crimson, and it seemed like that would be music that would be really interesting to play. It's not necessarily something that's very popular, like probably a lot of people listening to us might go, you know, we're King Crimson. Or maybe no, you never know. Maybe we have a ton of King Crimson
fans. Brian's raising his hand.
Maybe we have a ton of King Crimson fans listening to us right now. But that definitely would be something that would be interesting. Like I said, I couldn't necessarily see it happening. I'd have to figure that more modern groups would start getting into it too, you know, like, because they would be more on the, in tune with, like, you know, the youth or, you know, this generation.
Even just the digital marketplace.
Well, exactly, you know, like.
Plus bands that are looking to make their mark that haven't made their mark yet.
Yeah.
They got to be looking at this going, oh yeah, we want some of that.
Well, I mean, I honestly can see a lot of new bands wanting to make their debut in Rock Band or Guitar Hero.
Right, because they're pushing that.
Yeah, and that's really cool in my opinion. That's a whole new platform for people who want to get off the ground to get off the ground. And it's a huge market.
Speaking of things that are getting off the ground, something that's sort of been around but constantly being reinvented, and just recently, today or yesterday, depending how you want to look at it now, the DSi came out in Japan today, which would be yesterday, I guess, because it's really hard to figure out the whole time shift, but they're 12 hours ahead of us, so their day is over now today for them.
We just fell back an hour.
Went back an hour. I'm not even sure what year we are.
Yeah.
Last time. And I just like to know, figure out what your impressions are on the DSi, because it was interesting the way they went about it this time in Japan. Usually you have, you know, rows and rows of people waiting to pick up the new system. And I was reading an article on Kotaku, and they were saying how there was just one guy in line, because the only real way you could get the system is if you had a pre-order. And eventually lots of people did show up because with their pre-order ballots.
Yeah.
But they were figuring that by the end of the day, which for them the day is over by the time we're recording this, they'd be sold out. So I wouldn't be surprised if they are. And it seems to me like there's some interesting things about the DSi, but it really just seems like...
Yeah, are you going to buy one, though?
No, it's a lot of the same.
You got a DS, right?
Right, I have a DS Lite, and I feel that the change from the DS to the DS Lite was a worthwhile change, because I had a DS, and when the DS Lite came out, I got around to trying it, and I really liked the feel, because it was smaller and stuff, and I felt it was worth getting rid of my DS and getting a DS Lite. But with this one, what it's doing, I don't find it's that big a deal. Like, in fact, I think it's less appealing to me because they got rid of the Game Boy Advance
slot. Yeah, there's
slot.
No GBA slot, which is a huge thing for me for the DS.
Right, because a lot of the games I still want to play are my Game Boy Advance games.
Yeah.
And the big feature, with the DSi, I feel, is that the new downloadable content that it's going to be having.
Yeah,
similar to, like, WiiWare.
Yeah, that it could have.
Well, it could have, yes.
See, and that's the feature that might someday suck me into it. If there's all these downloaded games, I can only get them that way, and they're really cool, and I decide, oh, I got to get one. But I've got, you know, two...
You have drawerfuls of handheld systems.
I have drawerfuls of handheld
systems. So I wouldn't be surprised if you got a new one.
I've got two DSs already. I'm trying to remember what I've got exactly. I think I've got one Lite and one original now, I think. But I might have two Lites and an original, too. I don't know. Anyway, I've got enough of them at the moment.
Too many.
And I know that the new DSi has these two cameras in it, one facing away from you and one facing towards you. But having played around with the iToy and the PlayStation and various cameras and camera-based games on various systems and PCs and so on, I'm not very interested in those unless they do something radical to make it actually fun. And so the whole camera thing doesn't really appeal to me. And we had this talk about, you know, oh, well, the camera, the forward-facing camera is actually, you know, a nice camera. 3 megapixels, yeah, but now, like, 11-megapixel camera is $100
or
something.
It's not 3, is it? I thought it was, like, 1.6.
No, the camera facing outwards, which, you know, you can take pictures of stuff, is a 3-megapixel camera. The one facing towards you is a 0.3 megapixel.
0.3, that's right. What it is, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but that's the one that's for, like, recognition of, you know, what your face and what you're doing for gameplay.
Yeah. My camera is, like, a 5-megapixel camera.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, my phone, rather, is a 5-megapixel
camera. Yeah, so I don't think, you know, there are going to be a lot of people really running out to get this. There'll be some, you know, like my daughter, you know, 12-year-old girl. She would like to have one of these because it's got a 3-megapixel camera in it.
Yeah. Right. And you can play music now. And
it's like, got a music player. And...
But, you know, really she's better off with a actual inexpensive, cheaper than a DSi, by the way, but way nicer digital camera.
Yeah.
They're a dime a dozen now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, another cheap MP3 player. Yeah. Probably it's services all of her needs for that stuff way better than a DSi
does. You can buy both for less than a DSi.
Because let's face it, I mean, you know, she would probably really like one of these, but oddly enough, or maybe not so oddly enough, is, you know, the fact that the game part of it was probably what would least interest her, so...
Yeah, I mean, she plays the DS, but... That is the part that least interests her for a DSi.
Right.
You know, they've got DSs already, and really she plays like Nintendogs and Animal Crossing on it, and that's all she really plays on it. She played a little Drawn to Life and had some fun with that for a while. That's about it. But it's interesting. Nintendo's still pushing the DS, and they're making tons of money with them, and I wish them well with it and so on, but I don't need to add another one of those to my drawer full of handhelds.
Right.
Kind of feels like they're, like you said, it's not enough of a change to warrant a new hardware SKU. Like, you know, it just kind of feels like they're pushing it now.
Yeah.
They've sold, literally, in the States, they sold a DS every 5 seconds last year in the States. That's how many they sold.
Right.
And, I don't know, they're just...
Well, I mean, until I found out that it was just another iteration, I was assuming, well, they had the DS. They had the DS Lite. The DSi was going to be something different, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, they're coming out with a new handheld. But no, it's just another iteration. Because, I mean, we had, like, with Game Boy, there was Game Boy and Game Boy Color.
Right.
Then when we had the Game Boy Advance, and then we had the Game Boy Advance SP.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, right. It was Game Boy and then Game Boy Pocket.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
To me, because when I was little, I had a Game Boy. I loved my Game Boy Pocket because it was so much smaller.
But wasn't there, and there's a Micro too, right?
Right.
But
that one doesn't count.
Yeah.
But like for to
I know
me,
people who love their Micros.
Yeah, I know. But the screen's like this big.
It looks like a Nintendo controller. I mean, how can you go wrong with that?
It's but like the Game Boy. So the Game Boy is the DS. The Game Boy Pocket is the DS Lite.
Right.
Because that's all they did. They just made it smaller.
Right.
Right. Basically, that's all they did. All
right.
Yeah, and then
so the features are like the equivalent of adding the color.
Yeah, and then the Game Boy Color, it would be, it's a big enough change to warrant a new SKU. And then the Game Boy Advance was a huge.
What about the PSP 3000 or whatever? You know?
I don't even know. I still have I have my PS3 original PSP rather.
I've got two PSPs, and again, you know, the drawer full of handhelds, two PSPs, and. I will not be in a big hurry to buy the new PSP.
No.
Yes.
So
you have an armful of handhelds.
Yeah, I do.
We have to have a drum sound effect.
Yeah, we will, yeah.
That's all these games that you have to play multiplayer, you know? So, when Crystal Chronicles came out, you know, I went out and bought a handful of Game Boy Advances because we wanted to play, you know, we had to have four of them to play four-player Crystal Chronicles.
Nintendo is good at pushing their handhelds, pushing their stuff when you're really not going to use it as much as you want to.
But I got to tell you, the two DSs get a lot of use. We got two DSs with two copies of Animal Crossing, and that was the reason we had to have two DSs. And so they could visit each other's towns and so on. I've got four kids and a wife, and they all love Animal Crossing. Rightly so, great game.
Yeah.
And I got two PSPs because of Monster Hunter, and I wanted to play Monster Hunter with my son. And so... But I looked at the new PSP, and there's nothing there that makes me want to buy it. At first I thought, well, you know, it's supposed to have a nicer display. If it's really got a nicer display, okay. But gee, the PSP display was pretty good. It was nice and bright. I like it. I didn't, you know, I'm old. I'm 43, but I didn't have to squint or anything. You know, it wasn't like the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah.
You could actually see the screen on it and so on. It's got a decent backlit screen. And then we were looking at it though, the new screens, although they're a little bigger and they're brighter.
It's actually worse.
They're interlaced.
Yeah, so it's worse for some games. It makes them look horrible.
Yeah, they're not only interlaced, but they're a slow refresh interlace. And so it can really get this bad combing effect on games.
I know Disgaea, the Disgaea Portable Hour of Darkness, I think it's called. It looks atrocious on
it. And that's what I was showing him, actually, were screenshots of that game.
Yeah.
And
it just looks so bad. And they're saying was, everyone's like, well, obviously there's a glitch. They'll release a new firmware and fix it. And Sony went on the record and said, no, this is the way it is. We chose to make it this way.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know what they're doing going with an interlaced display with a slow refresh. That's just stupid.
Does the PSP 2000 have, is it all shiny? Is the back still matte, like, textured? Or is it all...
I really wouldn't be able to tell you.
You know, I can't really recall because I don't look at the back of the thing.
Yeah, it's just because I hate...
And I got one silver one and one black one. I don't know. I know they fit. I've got the newer ones, the smaller ones, not the fatties. The fatty felt fine on my hands. I sort of liked it. It you know, it had that little curve at the back and so on. But I like the small ones, and I got used to one of them, so I bought a second one. I made sure it was the same thing, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Now, I'd like to move on to our next segment, which is one I think we're all really looking forward to talking about. We're all involved in some way or one shape or form, or I'm terrible with expressions. One form, shape, or form.
In one way, shape, or form.
Thank you. You know, someone here knows how to speak, which... How come I'm hosting this?
I already host a podcast. I can't...
Yes.
I got my
place. Yeah, I'm involved with the 035s one.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the only one here who's never done a podcast. And for some reason,
the leader.
I'm the guy hosting the show. In one way, shape, or form, we're all somehow related to the... or involved in the game design industry.
Yeah.
And so we all have our say and our opinions of what makes a good game or what makes a bad game. And in this segment, we want to be able to talk about those things and... you know, every episode focused on one game in particular. Because it's one thing to say a game is good, or even you know, better example of that, it's anyone can say a game is really bad. But it's not always the same as, you know, it's not always as easy to say why it's bad and then come out with a solution to make it better. And I think a lot of people tend to complain about games, but really don't have anything valuable to offer. And if we were in the same position, I don't think we'd have anything, any right to be in the game design industry. So we've taken it upon our shoulders to try to instruct the world on how to improve their games.
So if they listen to this, then all the games that come out past this will be amazing.
Exactly. No excuses anymore. We're telling you how it's supposed to be. No. but no, seriously, like I said, we all have our opinions on what makes or breaks a game. And I thought it would be interesting to share our thoughts in this section. And appropriately so, me being the leader, quote unquote, I'm doing the airwave quotes here, you know, leader of this podcast, I have the honors of going first with my pick this week, which is Fable 2. And interestingly enough, you were talking earlier, you know, when we were talking about the games we were playing, and you haven't gotten around to playing Fable 2, and you... you've managed not to get, you know, caught by the whole Peter Molyneux hype. You know,
that's the ever so famous Peter Molyneux hype.
Well, you know, I know better because with Fable 1 that happened and a lot of people fell into that trap and then said, oh, well, I was disappointed by Fable 1 because it didn't live up to the hype.
Right.
And I enjoyed Fable 1. I played it a little later after it had been released for a while and I came to it without the hype. Really, it had all faded into the background at that point, and I just enjoyed it as a good action RPG and thought it was great, thought the voice acting was good, the dialogue was good, and I just had a lot of fun with it, and my son played it, and he had a lot of fun with it. So when this game was announced, it wasn't too long after Peter starts running his mouth off about stuff that's going to be in it, and I just said to myself, you know, I'm just not going to pay any attention to that. I'm just going to wait, and eventually I'll play the game, and I'll probably enjoy it, because it's going to be a lot like Fable 1, only next generation, and that'll be great. And I've got a feeling that that's exactly what's going to happen.
Right. And, you know, you're probably right. I unfortunately was one of the people who got swept by the original game's hype. And I was expecting a lot from it and was generally displeased with the results. Now, I also understand a lot of people thought it was a great game. And I think that had my expectations been a little more realistic, perhaps I would have enjoyed it more. So I didn't play much of the first one in the end. I did play a good amount of the second one, and I enjoyed the second one. But once again, at that point, my expectations were more realistic. But even with that said, there are things about the game that I feel are really subpar. And these aren't things that are you know, completely impossible to make better. In fact, a lot of these, the thing I have an issue with is something that could have made much easier, much really, really easy. And it's the whole relationship thing with, you know, marrying somebody and having children. I've always found the idea of, you know, forming a relationship, you know, being able to marry someone, having a kid in the story. I think it's a great idea. I think it can work out really, really well. Because if you play any game, like if you're into role-playing games mostly, you know, there are all these different characters that are introduced in the story.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're really into a game, eventually you, you know, form attachments to these characters. And that's the biggest element that's missing in Fable 2, is that there's really no reason for me to be attached to these characters. You can just really, literally, you can step up to anyone, male or female, doesn't matter, and you can woo them. And within minutes, they want to marry you. You give them a ring, you get married, and then you can turn around and have a child. And that's all well and good, but there's no emotional attachment to that character. There's no real reason for me to want to do this. In fact, I was joking around the other day, and in part being serious, that I have more emotional attachment to my dog in Fable 2 than my wife or my child.
Right, because you actually interact with the dog and with game mechanics and gameplay. And,
right.
You know, the dog follows you around in your adventures and does things with you. Whereas, you know, the wife is just somebody, like you say, you meet, you woo her in 5 minutes, you got her married, she's in the house, she's having kids, and you're done.
Exactly. So, all right, so that's my complaint, right? So how do you make this better? Well, very simple. And I'll give Fallout 3 as an example. The way the characters work in Fallout 3 is you have your generic, you know, male villager, female villager. They're like the no-name characters.
Yeah.
And then you'll have the named characters like Anne the blacksmith or Bob the mechanic type of thing. And these are usually the people who are your quest givers.
Yeah.
So if you meet them, they'll interact with you. And then that opens up dialogue branches and you can talk with them, accept quests or refuse quests.
Yeah.
And really, if Fable 2 had done that sort of thing, make it impossible for you to marry just random persons. Make it so you can only marry the named people,
yeah,
first of all, and add to the game dialogue trees so that it's not just about standing in front of them and dancing a dance or, you know, singing a song or, you know, other types of activities. To woo them, you would actually have to interact with the people, and then, you know, you would get a little bit of personality from them. And based on what you would choose as your answers, you know, they would then decide if they like you or not.
Yeah.
And like I said, that's not complicated because tons of games...
Are we talking like Japanese dating sim?
Well, and that's the thing too. I want to... Sort of like that, yes. I mean, I'm not asking for, you know, a fully, you know, replicated a Japanese dating sim. That's not what I'm saying. But I suppose to a certain degree, you know, something like that. But like I said, just take dialogue trees and, you know, they might ask you questions. And it might be just a question of two of... maybe it's like Japanese dating sims. I was gonna say, I haven't played a lot of those games, so I really couldn't make a comparison. But really, it's just maybe some judgment calls, or you know, they ask you, you do witty banter with them on just day to day things, and based on what you say, you know, then they have a better impression for you, good or bad. It's the same way with like just in Fallout 3, just the general good or bad thing is like, well, you know, there's a guy over there who's, you know, owes me money. I want you to go and beat him up to get my money. And if you say yes, oh, you get bad karma. If you say no, you know, you should talk things out or whatever, and I'll go talk to him and get it to work, you get good karma. So it would just be the same thing with you know, move towards a relationship thing. So, like I said, I haven't played a lot of Japanese dating sims. So if that's how it works with them, then yes, I suppose that's what I'm saying. But it wouldn't have to go, you know, into more seedier directions.
Right. I think that I can see where you're coming from. I kind of think it could be taken in somewhat of, it could, the dialogue trees obviously could work very well, but if I were playing it and I wanted that emotional attachment to that character, I would want it to be a lot more involved than just talking.
Oh, well, yeah, but like, that's step one, right?
Yeah.
And there's another thing you could do too, which I was explaining to Darren the other day, is it would be easy for the game to make checks to see if, you know, off and on switches, status effects, you know, if am I married, yes or no? Well, let's say there's a generic quest where you have to go rescue someone,
mm-hmm.
okay? The default quest is the mayor of the town gets kidnapped somewhere. You have to go save him. Your bandits have him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the game would simply have to do a check to see, well, is this person married? Yes. Then let's change it around so it's the wife that gets kidnapped.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have to go save your wife, or it's your kid that gets kidnapped. And if you don't have a kid, then it's the wife, you know? And you could just make these checks and change the story around so it really more revolves around the fact that you have these people in your life and make the game so much more involving and realistic.
Yeah.
Sorry, I cut you off
there. No, don't worry. That sounds like an awesome idea. But for wooing them, like take the Harvest Moon games, for example. Mm-hmm. The way the Harvest Moon games works is there is 8 or 4 or 5 or 6, I can't remember, NPC girls or guys in the later ones where you can play a girl that all have basically tastes. So you go and you have to talk to them, and the more you talk to them, the more they'll reveal about like who they are and what they like. So if you were going to do that, something like that for Fable 2, you go through all these dialogue trees, and maybe at some point she'll say that she really likes like this certain kind of leather,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you have to go get some. And if you give her some, then you basically get like points behind the scene for that person. And that's how you would win them over, is by bringing them stuff that they like that's applicable to them.
Right.
And only that NPC, right? So you have to talk to them and get to know them before you actually can woo them.
Right.
You like, do you understand where...
And you're giving the example of, you know, if let's say she likes leather, okay? Well, perhaps you didn't find out from her that she likes leather. Maybe talking to another NPC, you find out that, you know, well, Sally, the, you know, leathersmith worker... That's probably a bad example. Really likes leather, you know? Or, you know, and okay, well, she really likes leather. So maybe instead of bringing her a gift, I'm going to go to the armor shop.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make my armor made out of leather. So when I go see and talk to her, she'll think I look really cool because I'm wearing leather.
Right.
Or, you know, or if somebody like, if you like the barbarian chick, well, you're going to go and go buy some big swords. And she's like, yeah, you're cool because you like big swords.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
And there's could be all of this stuff going around in the world where you could learn about other characters through other characters.
Yeah.
And sort of try to put, you know, piece things together, thinking, yeah, well, if I want to attract this person, this is how I'm going to have to do it, you know. And like I said, it would add a layer to the game that would make it so much more interesting. I don't necessarily think that Fable 2... necessarily needs the marriage kid thing, but if you're going to put it in, you know, put a little bit more effort into it.
Is it, I was talking to my friend about it the other day who really, really dug Fable 1, hasn't played 2 yet because he doesn't have a good enough PC. Is it better or worse than the relationship in Fable 1? It seems to be worse.
I really wouldn't be able to tell you. Like I said, I started playing the first Fable. I played it for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And it really didn't catch on to me. And I was disappointed with it. And I stopped playing. So I never really got far into the whole relationship thing. So I really couldn't make a comparison.
Because I know what he said, that the way relationships worked in the first one, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, was basically you needed certain amount, you needed renown before you could even woo anyone. So you needed to go and make yourself known,
mm-hmm.
and then you could go and they'd be like, oh, I know who you are.
It was still pretty simple.
Was it,
but it sounds a lot like to what it is in Fable 2. I'll have to play 2,
right.
I'll have to
okay.
see.
But
it sounds, you know, fairly simple.
Could that. You still woo them in the first 10 minutes when you started playing the game?
I don't know about the first 10 minutes, because the first 10 minutes you were a kid. But once you became an adult...
and that's what I
pretty
mean as
quickly
well.
You could start wooing them.
Right.
I really can't recall. I don't know that I tried in the first 10 minutes of being an adult. But
yeah.
Because yeah, like, and that's what
it
I
was
mean.
Really drop dead easy though.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it took again 5 minutes work and I was married.
Right. And really that's what I mean by the first 10 minutes. Like, yeah, when there's a part at the beginning where you're a kid and you can't do that stuff. But literally as soon as I became an adult, and I began running around as an adult, there was a lady standing outside of my caravan. And I started talking to her, and I could do these, you know, oh, I danced a little dance, and I could, you know, belch or fart and that sort of stuff. Which I really never, I'm not sure how Peter Molyneux associated belching and farting with a way to pick up girls, but in any case. I was talking to her, and I was noticing that a little bar was moving, and it was moving towards a little ring. And I talked to her and did a few dances, a few things for a while, and in no time, the little meter was at the ring. I couldn't marry her then and there because I didn't have a ring.
Yeah.
But had I had a ring, right in the first 5 minutes, 5-10 minutes of the game, I could have married her. I could have just found some money, bought a ring, married her, had the kid. 15 minutes later, I'm a family man. Literally.
And some people might say, like, your concept of, well, maybe you should only be able to marry the named ones that then have, some content behind them, dialogues built and so on for them and all that. Some people might say, well, no, but I like the sandbox. I want anybody out there. I want to be able, to have a chance at it. I want to be able to try anyway to woo them and so on.
But you can.
It doesn't have to be the named people necessarily. You could make a system that would make it interesting. To be able to form relationships or try to form anyway relationships with anybody in the world, but I think the important thing is you need to have to put a little work into it. It needs to be a little longer term thing. Relationships take a while to build, and they should take a while to build in the game. And there should be a lot of interactions between you and the people that you're building the relationships with, and a lot of game mechanic style interactions. You know, maybe they go on quests with you.
Right.
You can find quests around town that would interact with that person in some way, shape, or form. It's like, oh, well, I'll go do a favor for her brother. And that'll make her feel better about me because I helped out some members of her family.
Yeah.
And, the renown thing, that's on the right track. You know, if I'm more well thought of in town, maybe she'll like me, or maybe she likes, the bad boys. Well, maybe if I'm more of a bad boy and thought worse of in town, she'll like me or whatever.
Yeah, because maybe you need the renown to, date the high class people. It's like, I want to marry Princess Sally. But, for to get, the permission of her father, the king, you need to be a well-respected hero or something.
That's right. Maybe marrying the butcher's daughter requires lesser renown.
Right, but then again, and it's interesting because you were talking about how people can go adventuring with you. Well, for instance, let's say you fall in love with Barbara the Barbarian. Well, Barbara the Barbarian, if you marry her, she'll become your friend and, she goes adventuring with you. She's your adventuring party. But maybe if you marry, like you said, the butcher's daughter, let's say her name is Sarah, well, she doesn't go adventuring with you. However, when you get back from adventuring, she's made all these meals for you that you can, are healing objects or something.
And if you drop off the wolf meat with her, she turns it into, healthy wolf jerky. Wolf jerky that you can eat on your adventures and help. They've got to be involved with you in the game mechanics and the gameplay some way. So, because that's how you develop a game relationship with these people, and you need that to feel like you got a relationship going in the world with them, and you've got some feeling towards them. That works. Like you said, with the dog, you're playing with the dog. The dog is, finding treasures for you and helping you, attacking enemies with you and so on. And you feel like the dog is really a companion. I have been watching my son play a little bit. And, that's why the dog works. And you've got to do something similar with, people like your wife. They've got to at least interact with you as much as the stupid dog does. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And like I said, there's so many possibilities. Again, marry the leather worker, she makes armor. Marry a seamstress, she makes clothes. All these different things that could work. And there's a lot of potential there. And I don't think it's that much harder to implement these things than it would work. And it'll make a huge difference to the game.
It's interesting on how much Peter Molyneux pushed that dog. He ranted for pages upon pages of interviews about that dog and how amazing the dog was going to be. Mm-hmm. And then it seems like the relationship system was just completely tacked on. They're just like, oh, I guess we'll put that back in.
Even the dog, don't get me wrong, I love my dog and my Fable 2. But if you look at it closely, it's really not that amazing because I've got a dog in Fallout 3 that does a lot of the same things.
Yeah,
I hadn't heard anything about a dog in Fallout 3.
I wouldn't necessarily trust what Peter Molyneux says, but it's just like the whole idea that he pushed. He was so excited about that dog, and he didn't seem to care at all about relationships that really should matter more than a dog.
Yeah,
if you're gonna get married, like marriage buying a dog.
Yeah.
The scales are a little tipped there.
Yeah, yeah. Your dog can't die because that would be traumatic. But you can lose
kill
your
wife.
King.
Yeah,
yeah.
I come home and I pick up a dog, and I bring it home, And, you know, it's there might be a little drama at home over the fact, and the kids get excited and the wife gets annoyed or whatever. We have to have a dog. But, you know, it's literally the sort of thing where I could just, on the spur of the moment, decide to buy a dog one day and bring it home.
However,
and that's okay.
Yeah.
Now, if I bring a wife home all
bring
of a
home
sudden,
a new wife, yeah.
Well, you know, or, you know, I go to my parents and say, look, I got married today, a spur of the moment. Here she is. Picked her up.
And that's
you know, that's a little different.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, and that's literally what happens in Fable 2.
Yeah.
Like, I was in town. I was dancing around. I was, you know, and I realized some girl was attracted to me. And I was kind of bored, and I was like, you know, I'm just going to marry her. And I had a kid. I wanted to see what it was like, because
yeah.
I had to review the game anyway.
Yeah.
So I figured I got to go through this to see what it's like.
Yeah.
And pretty much afterwards forgot about it. Until one point where I was looking at upkeep for the house, and I noticed that my wife wanted sex. And I was like, oh, I better check up on her or something. And then try to figure out for like 15 minutes how to actually have sex. Which probably sounds terrible when you think about it. That
well, you were, I remember you were also saying that you were just like dancing around town or whatever, and everyone that's around you gets affected.
Yes.
So you, the town crier, the dude with the bell, was actually in love with you for a little while there.
I believe he still is. And he still follows me around with a giant red heart over his head. And it is really weird because, like I said, you can direct things to people. Like, I can try to woo someone with my dances and saying really nice things. But everyone standing around you gets affected, like if everyone was being addressed.
Yeah.
And it just so happens when I was trying to woo my future wife that the town crier was standing around me, and he kept following me around, and he had this big red heart over his head, and I couldn't figure out what was going on until I checked his status and realized that he was gay. And I think that's kind of interesting that, you know, they can allow for same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
I think that's a smart move, but that's just me. In any case, I thought it was really interesting, and I even considered, you know, marrying him for a while because I thought he's the town crier. Maybe he'll give me an interesting name. But in any case,
Pookie Wookie Snuggle Bunnies, the Great.
Yes. Yeah. In any case, moving on, we also have another segment that I like to get to. I think we've pretty much covered the Fable 2.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got my say in what I'd like Fable 2 to be. Or what I would like to see them do to make it better.
With that aspect.
With that aspect.
There's other aspects that I think.
Oh, there's other aspects. I mean, if there's something you would like to bring up for Fable 2, by all means, go right ahead. But really, the issue that I was mostly concerned about was the relationships in Fable 2. Because to me, role-playing games need to have a little bit more of a feel of, I wouldn't say realism, but immersion is probably the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
You want to feel like you're, you know, immersed in this universe, and that the decisions that you make and the things to do you do have impact on the world. And if you can relate to characters and events that are taking place in this imaginary world, you're going to have a whole lot more fun with it in the long run.
Yeah. The other big thing that I've been reading about that I was actually reasonably excited about was the co-op, which they completely botched. Like, in any way they could have failed, they did.
Yes.
See, that's the reason that Fable 2 is sitting on the bottom of my pile now instead of on the top.
Because that was
I've got all these other games to play, and I had to make a decision about what I play first. And if the co-op had been really cool, I probably would have played it right along with JF and co-oped with him. But the co-op stank, so it went straight to the bottom of the pile.
You can't play your own character. You can't take any of your items or your abilities, you can't, you're tethered to the person. Even in online co-op, you're still tethered.
Can't rotate the camera angle.
Really?
If you're the person, if you're the lackey, I try to remember what term they gave you. I think it's lackey. it's or something like manservant.
It sort of says it all right there.
Right. You're like, you know, if you're player two,
yeah.
You are stuck in one specific camera view. And I can understand if you're playing locally on the same screen, which is why I'm assuming you're tethered to that character, the other characters. You're only limited to a certain moving, you know, on one screen doing co-op, which is probably why only one can control the camera angle.
Right.
But there's really no excuse for having that over online play.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
You're really, really, all you do as player two in that game is you follow the other guy around and you hit the attack button when there's monsters.
You can't even open chests.
Can't open chests. You can't interact with most of the world.
The dog is better than you.
Yeah, once again, you know, maybe that's why Peter has been toting the dog so much, is because
the rest of the game
is... the rest of the game is just so bad. It's not the dog that's so great, it's just in comparison. No, of course, with that said, I still really enjoyed Fable 2 as a single player. I mean, we're saying some bad things about it now, but I think it was a good game. It's just there's a lot of things that, you know, lacked polish, if you know, to say it one way.
Which is exactly the same thing that happened with the first one.
Right, and once again. And, you know, I'm really hoping that, you know, when they make Fable 3, if they ever do, that they start, you know, listening more to these sort of things and trying to implement these things that we want to see. But once again, we're not the developers at this point, so we can only, you know, tell people what we think. And
someday I'll be the one who makes Fable 3 and I'll fix it.
Oh, so. Perfect. Okay, you heard it exclusive. We have the developer of Fable 3 here with us today. All right, so we'll move on to our next section now, or next segment, which is general geekeries. I think that. Even though we're strongly opinionated when it comes to games and the video game industry, you know, there's all sorts of other things that we enjoy. I mean, we're not just a one-trick pony here at Northern Geeks.
We've got two or three tricks.
Two or three at the least. I mean, we're almost as talented as the Fable 2 dog. Like, almost.
There's a large geek kingdom that we each pick two or three things out of that we really...
Right, because I mean, we all really like, you know, comics. We all like, you know, just general tech stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the things we all really like here is anime.
Yeah.
And recently Brian got us to start watching a new anime that is interesting how it came out because from, correct me if I'm wrong, from my understanding, it premiered on the PlayStation Network.
Yeah, the North American premiere, it was. I'm pretty sure it's being released in Japan normally because they don't have the video store on the PlayStation Network. But in North America, in the United States, the PlayStation Network video store started up just after E3. And on it, there was an exclusive anime that's not being released in North America any other way. So it's only being aired on the PlayStation Network, which is really neat, in my opinion. It's a very good idea. Poorly executed, though.
What's the name of the series?
Oh, yeah, sorry. It's called XAMD. X-A-M apostrophe D. Was subtitled Lost Memories.
Right.
And it's really, because the PlayStation video store is not in Canada, I found some fan subs of it to watch, and
they were just magically dropped in front of your door.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Right. It's HD quality, too. It's fantastic.
It's lovely. The anime stork brought it to you.
But it's, I really, really dug it. I downloaded the first one just because I was really, actually what drew me in was the music from the preview, the trailer for it on the PlayStation Network. It's by a group called Boom Boom Satellites.
Yes.
Who I really, really like. And, so I'm like, wow, that's a really good song. I want to watch it now. So I downloaded it and it just totally sucked me in. So I downloaded I skillfully acquired the next 8 episodes or the next 7 episodes. And I've just been totally sucked in, but I've been in the process of switching computers, so I haven't gotten around to getting the rest of them. But you guys watched the first 2 episodes of it
first
as well.
Correct. Yeah. And I really liked it. I liked the art style. There are certain things about the character designs, especially Zam, the creature himself.
Yeah.
I like the way he's designed. He reminds me a lot, in some ways, of one of the characters from Neon Genesis Evangelion. If you're familiar with the movies,
they're the mass-produced Evas,
right? The giant white ones that Asuka fights in
the red lips, and...
yeah, that basically tear her apart at one point. But those the white ones, I find sort of remind me a little bit of a version of that, and I thought that was kind of neat. I'm not so big on the whole, you know, giant monster fights. If they're done really well, I can get into it. But really, it's more about the characters for me.
Yeah, the same with me. When they pause during an episode for the 15-minute giant monster fight, they lose me a little bit during that period, and I'm just sort of yawning and looking at my watch. And you know, it's okay. It can be interesting. It can be fun. You know, I remember some old anime that consisted of a lot of that sort of stuff. Black Magic M66 and so on. I you know, I liked those anime. I enjoyed them, but especially with a half hour series like that, or 20 minute episodes or whatever, if they take most of the episode up for a big fight, they're starting to lose me. And this didn't seem like it was going to, you know, in the first two episodes, they didn't really do that. They had some action and some fights, but it didn't go on for a super long time. There was that one fight.
Yeah, it's sort
there's
of
still
like,
character development going on during all of it, right. though, you know.
Yeah, it was sort of like the the second half of the first episode and the first half of this. Did I say that right? The second half of the first episode and the first half of the second episode. So it was sort of like, you know, went over that episode.
But there was lots of character interaction and stuff going on while the fighting was going on on, too. And it didn't lose me at any point. And like you said, there was some of the art design was really neat.
It's done just so if you guys don't know, it's done by the Studio Bones, who were the people who did Wolf's Rain, which is another, it's a series I highly recommend. Very interesting series. But the art style is really good. What I really like about the style of it is the animation. I found movement, the way they captured movement and the way, even of the giant monsters, like of, especially of Zamd, the way Zamd moves is very well done. It's very fluid. And it's in HD, and it looks so good.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks very organic.
Yes, very. I found that with Zamd, it was all very, very natural. It was very organic, very fluid. Mm-hmm. I really, really, that's probably my favorite part of the show, is just the way people move and the way that...
And you know, I've seen two episodes, and the characters have been interesting. There's lots of characters. They're unique. They're setting it up really well, and I'd like to see more.
Yeah, they really well. I thought they introduced the cast really well. Like they don't tell us a lot about the characters, but they show you a little bit of everyone and enough to get sort of a flavor for every character. And I'm really looking forward to find out more about this person or that person. Like, and I can't remember the character's name, but there's a girl who has her own sort of personal fighter jet thing.
Yeah.
And she's wearing a helmet. And I was like, yeah, that sort of reminds me of Nausicaa of Valley.
That's exactly what it reminds
me of. And I was right there, it was like, ooh, that sort of got me interested. I'm like, oh, I'm looking forward to finding more about her.
Yeah.
And
they do character development very well. It's like you said, there is it sucks whenever they get sucked into combat. But I found that it's, in all of the episodes I've watched so far, it's almost entirely about... the main character, whose name I also forget right now, him trying to deal with what has happened to him, because he basically gets possessed by this beast, whatever it is, inside of him, and he's trying to deal with it, and he's basically being held hostage the entire time, and it's all, like, you're learning so much about all these characters, and it's just, it really sucked me in. I really, really enjoyed the way they went about doing it, and the characters are all very interesting, like you said. There's a lot of laugh out loud moments later on.
And that's important, because if you throw us in battle scenes too quickly before we get attached to the characters, then we don't necessarily care how the outcome, you know, is going to come out or end. But if I get to a point in the series where I'm attached to these characters and I'm seeing them fight, and, you know, I know that, you know, because anime can go in all sorts of directions.
It's Japanese, they'll kill people.
They'll kill people, like, really, like, you know, they'll, like... But, you know, this is only halfway through, and that guy was, I thought he was important, and he died.
Yeah.
What's going on? So there really is something to it that, you know, when you get attached to the character in anime, that, oh, you know, something bad could happen, you know, and it often does. So you're really on the edge of your seat going, oh, what's going to happen in this fight?
Yeah.
And we know that Zamd is planned for 26 episodes, so they've got their story arc all figured out. They can tie off the loose ends. They can kill the characters off. They can do all sorts of stuff like that. They don't have to drag it out. They know 26 episodes, we're done.
Yeah, and that's, I really respect that from a studio.
Yeah.
That's because I'm tired of, I was a big Lost fan when it first came out. I really dug the storyline. I dug the person who did it. He's also done other things I liked. Mm-hmm. And I liked that he said he had this much planned, and then they reached that point. And then it kept going.
Right.
And I'm like, no, this, and then I just completely lost interest.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's
filler,
American.
Inuyasha. Yeah. You know, there's lots of anime that does it, too. Anime by people that I really respect, but then they just seem to drag it on.
Yeah.
And I wish they'd sort of say to themselves, you know, even if it's going to be a really long series, sit down and say, okay, 96 episodes, we're done.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have a whole story, and I'm going to wrap it up in there.
Yeah. Keep going.
I was just going to say, because you were giving Lost as an example.
Yeah.
I would almost like it if American television would do more of that approach, where it would be, well, we've got this series plan, and it's just going to be two seasons, 26 episodes, or, you know, it's going to be, you know, 25 episodes. Because I know with a season, with most American TV shows, if you know, they're like 20 episodes in a season or something. Mm-hmm. And I wish they weren't afraid of making more open and ended, you know, series where it would be, well, we're planning for beginning to an end, it's going to be so many episodes and it can be over, and then we're going to do something else.
Yeah.
Because they're always trying to milk a show so much that it's like, well, this show is really popular, so let's try to keep it going for as long as we can until it dies out and goes away. And I can understand why they want to do that, you know, for financial reasons, obviously. But it would be really interesting if they more stations would do more. Well, this year is this is the show. Next year is going to be another show.
Yeah.
And I'd have to imagine that for writers and creators of show, it'd be much more interesting to be able to do something new, you know, every year type of thing, or every other year. Or...
It's take much more of a mini series kind of approach.
Exactly. Like, and I wish there was more of that.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyways, coming back to Zan, because we sort of went a little sidetrack there. Like I said, I really like it. I'm really looking forward to seeing more. But let's talk about what the real issue here is. It's, you know, the anime is great. We love the story. We love the art. But what's our impressions on this whole PlayStation Network thing? Yeah, I mean, it's out in the States and Japan and I believe Europe. No Canada. But
actually, no, the video store's not in Europe yet.
Not in Europe?
No.
Okay, my mistake. I thought I heard Europe, but it might be planning for.
It just came out in Japan.
Okay. But it's Japan, U.S., yes? Okay. So, and how much is this costing us?
Is PlayStation, like the video store on the PlayStation Network, or to download Zammed?
To download Zammed.
I'm not sure. I know that...
I believe, is it $2.99?
$2.50, I think.
My understanding was that it's $2.99 standard, $3.99 high def.
Okay.
And this is a rental.
Yes, that's it. Well, the way it works is, the way the video store works is you can buy anything you want in standard definition.
Right.
Buy it and keep it, standard definition. But if you buy it, if you get it in HD, it's only a rental. It's the same way any digital content works. You have it for 14 days. Once you hit play, you have 24 hours to finish it.
Right.
And then it deletes itself off your console. So, but that's atrocious to me. It's an anime that's being hyped as being in HD, and it looks so good, but you can't buy it in HD.
And you're paying $3.99.
Yeah.
To rent a 20-minute episode?
Yeah.
I mean, let's slide over to Xbox Live and go rent an HD movie that's 2 hours long and, you know, comparable price. And if we try to rent like 3 or 4 episodes of this thing, it's going to cost us a fortune.
Right.
It seems like there's a discontinue there, like,
because it's $4 an episode, like we said, $3.99.
Yeah,
there are 26 episodes, so do the math, right? We're talking about $100 to watch this, and you don't own it, like,
which would be the same as buying a box set,
right?
For.
You could probably, you know, that's, and even now, like, I remember prices of anime used to be super high, and they're sort of like gone down a bit, but you know, 26 episode, you pay $100, you own the DVD box set.
Nice one.
And
comes
here
with
you
extras.
Just right. And now extras, and you know, you actually have something you own.
Yeah.
Which is the thing I, as a collector, as somebody who really likes anime, that's what I want to emphasize here, is you actually own something. Where here you paid $100 for the, you know, the chance to see, you know, these 26 episodes.
Yeah. It's there's a lot wrong with it. Like, it's I don't know. That's why, obviously, even if it was in Canada, I probably would have given it the chance, like, on the PlayStation Network. I would have been like, all right, well, depending on how much it is, it might be worth it. But, like, 26 episodes at $4, and it would probably be a little bit more in Canada. It's just not worth it.
They really need to move to a subscription fee-based design model, where you pay X amount of, you know, every month, and you have access to these things that you can go and watch them whenever you want.
Yeah.
Whenever new stuff comes out, you can watch it. So it's
or
not
if
so bad.
I'm gonna charge $3.99 for an episode. I want to own it.
Own it, yeah, at least.
I can re-download it whenever I want. I can watch it whenever I want. It doesn't go away from my hard drive unless I make it go away myself, and even then, I get the right to re-download it.
Right, similarly to the games on Xbox Live, for instance.
Right.
You know, you buy it, you own the rights to it. You can download it anytime.
It's funny, the reason they don't allow you to buy HD content is because they would be competing with themselves, with Blu-ray. But it doesn't count with Zammed because Zammed isn't available on Blu-ray. But every other HD, we'll see.
Well, and let's face it, the only reason people are probably paying $4 an episode on the PlayStation Network is because they can't, you know, they're not getting it some other way.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, they can't go to the store and buy it, so they're willing to sort of be hijacked a little bit.
Yeah.
By,
a lot.
And pay this ridiculous price, but it does seem to me like it's overpriced. And especially when you, like I said, you just slide sideways and take a look at what's on the Xbox 360, and you go, okay, well, movies, whole movies over there, and I'm getting an episode over here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it's a really good point. I do think it's a great concept. I think that debuting and having it exclusive to the PlayStation Network is a great idea for that show if it were executed properly.
Right.
If it were the right price, or and you could own it, and it like they came out once you get like six episodes, you could buy an episode pack for a discount.
Right.
Like that sort of thing. That would be really cool.
Much like music on Rock Band.
Yes, exactly.
Because, I mean, you can't diss the whole idea of having things on demand, because we're all, we've become a society that wants what we want when we want it now.
Yes.
We don't want to wait for things anymore.
Yeah.
So the idea of having stuff on demand, you can go on your Xbox or your PlayStation and something, you want to watch a movie, you want to, you know, watch an anime episode, you want to, you know, you want to play a new game. If it's there, I download it, I play it, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, end of story. And that's great. It's just, like I said, I think that they need to work the pricing schemes better and how the whole digital rights things works, because if it's not going to improve, it's not going to reel me in, personally.
Yeah, and Sony's always been iffy on digital rights. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes, if it's popular enough to stay where it's at, or if they decide to go for a subscription-based. Because that's what Netflix is, subscription-based, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is the Xbox 360.
Right. Well, that's what's coming to the Xbox 360. But again, only in the United States.
Yeah, I don't... They said, and it's funny, because they said the PSN video store was North America. It's a North American store. And I'm like, okay, because our store is connected to the American store. It's the same thing, right? But we don't have the video store for some unknown reason.
It's legal reasons.
There's
a whole lot of, I mean, they can lock down legal rights to rent you material and sell you material within one country.
They
do the states first. Every country after that is the same work all over again. And they got to renegotiate their deals and everything. They can't just sort of blanket do it for the world. And it's a lot of work, it's a lot of money, and so they sort of start with the United States and eventually maybe get around to the other places, maybe someday.
Right, and it's funny because, like you said, you know, they really do market it as North America.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, you know, it's really just the States. Canada we're in Canada, and there's a bunch of stuff that gets left out from us. I can only start imagining how it is in Mexico. I mean, think about it. Mexico is part of North America, and I'm guessing they're getting like almost nothing from the whole North American
market. Yeah. What about, isn't Greenland a part of North America? Technically,
No. I think that's part of Europe.
Really?
Yeah.
Because
it's part of Iceland. You know, my lack of geography is probably...
If that's the case, they're really up screwed.
I was terrible at Carmen Sandiego when I was young. But that's a tangent. In any case, like I said, I think, in theory, downloadable content and on-demand stuff is good. They just need to work some things out, obviously.
I mean, it needs to be easy, it needs to be cheap, it needs to be fast. And even with movies, we were discussing how Netflix, you know, they can bring it. If they do bring it to Canada... Are we interested in it? And I thought I would be, but I don't know. It depends on, for example, how long does it take to download a movie?
Can you stream it while it's
downloading? Well, yeah, that always seems to not work as well as they want it to. If I can stream it and watch it while it's downloading, or if it'll download really fast, well, that's one thing. But if I've got to like order my movie two nights in advance,
then go rent it.
Yeah, well. Exactly. it's got to be easy. It's got to be fast. It's got to be cheap. Otherwise, what is the incentive to keep me there on downloading this content on my console and watching it on my console, as opposed to turning to my PC and going, uTorrent, where is what I want to watch?
What is
go
this
find
new
it for me.
You speak of?
Yeah.
You know, and that's a reality. It's like coming back to the Beatles and their music licensing. You know, the ship sailed on them as far as MP3 land and iPods goes.
Yeah.
It's not like people said, oh, well, the Beatles music isn't on iTunes, so we'll I will not listen to it on my iPod. They went out and found it, and they put it on their iPod, and the Beatles got nothing for that.
Right.
That was a big mistake on their part. And I think that the content holders for movies and anime need to think about these issues. And, because I want to do impulse buying of this stuff.
Yeah, that's what it's for. It's meant to rope you in when you're, you know, it's only $2.
It's late at night, I don't feel like playing the game. Hey, look, the video store's there. Ooh, look, they got an episode of Zammed. Cool, I think I'll watch that.
Yeah.
You know, but it's got to be that easy, and I got to be able to just go, oh, well, it doesn't cost very much at all, and I can just have it right away and start watching it. And
because if anime episodes were, let's say they were 99 cents, like, you know, a song on iTunes, even if it was just rental at that point, you'd be like, sure, it's like a quarter of the price, so they're making a whole lot less money, but you got to imagine that there'd be so many more people willing to do the 99 cents thing as opposed to the $4 thing, right?
Even more than once.
Yeah.
I would, like, if I rented it for 99 cents and Eva hadn't seen it, I'm like, this was amazing. I would easily rent it again.
So right.
Exactly. You know, then you wouldn't have to own it. You just say to yourself, well, whenever I want to watch it, I'll spend the dollar.
Yeah.
And
that's exactly how I treat it.
Yeah. And then you're thinking, $26, I can see the whole thing. You know, that. And imagine, like, it's just coming out now. But let's say you didn't get on the wagon when it started. And you're like, you know, we're planning a weekend, you know. We want to do something together, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, let's watch this cool series. 26 episodes. It's going to cost us, you know, $26. You know, we're going to buy some chips and pops or something. The whole thing is going to cost us $40. We'll split four ways, $10 each, and we can spend a weekend watching some cool anime we haven't seen.
And I mean, like, it would work very well. And I mean, even if they did, like, you know, rent the whole series for $25, you save a dollar, right? Like, there's a lot that they could do with it. And I have a feeling just because the market is so new, like, the digital distribution is very, it's just getting off, especially in consoles, it's just getting off its off of the ground on its feet, so it's I hope that's where it goes.
Right, and even like anime enthusiasts, you know, would be like, after having spent the $25 seeing it, they'll probably still want to turn around and pay the $50 to own the box set. They still make their money on their discs, you know, which is one of their concerns, I think, you know, with owning digital stuff, because they're, you know, the whole Blu-ray thing.
Yeah,
but you know, I think digital downloads are probably going to be play a larger role in the future as far as games and everything as well. I mean, I'm still a little bit old school and I still having the nice thing on my shelf. But, you know, I lost track of where I was going with this.
Well, there's things they could do that would really sell me on it. Like I said, with music, there are things they could do that would sell me even more on buying music online. And this is the same with games. Microsoft Arcade has it. It's like a database of games. I paid my money. I own the games even if I don't have them on the hard drive.
Right.
I can re-download them. I can play them. I own them. It's like they're caretakers of my library for me.
Yeah.
You know, I have bought a library of games and they caretake them for me, and I can check them out whenever I want and play them and then stick them back into the library, you know, and not worry about them. And if my Xbox dies, I can buy another Xbox and I can still have my content.
Yeah.
And I think they need to look at that model and say, okay, well, we need to do that with games, we need to do that with music, we need to, you know, we need to do that with movies, we need to do that with everything. Because then I could get sucked into it. Then there's other servers out there, there's other places that aren't my house where I can store my content.
Yeah.
And it moves with me. And if I go on a business trip and I go somewhere and I'm staying in a hotel, I can hook up my console, my PC, whatever, and I can still get out my content.
Yeah.
It traveled with me. And if my house burns down, I didn't lose my video collection.
Yeah.
It's on a server somewhere in the world and mirrored and backed up. And all they've really got is, you know, the information that I own this stuff. I've paid for this stuff. And they'll fetch the stuff for me off of the server and send it to me. And I would pay a premium for a service like that because they're managing my content for me.
Yeah.
And I don't have to store it, keep it, lay the DVDs laying around the house. I don't have to have any of that. And I can never lose it.
Yeah.
As long as their business model is robust and they stay in business and they keep their servers up with the content on it and so on, I will always have access to it. And they can migrate it to the new devices and they can migrate it to new resolutions. And they can charge me a little fee for upgrading and things like this. And I'll be perfectly happy with all that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, actually. The during the whole format war between Blu-ray and HD DVD, everyone was saying that Microsoft didn't really care about HD DVD. because Microsoft, what Microsoft wants is digital distribution to win. They don't care about disk-based format. They would much rather have digital distribution win because they have their foot in the door on that, and they're doing it better. And so that's their form, that's their HD format of choice is digital,
right,
as opposed to a disk.
Yeah.
And while it seems that Blu-ray won, that maybe not so much in the near future, if this keeps up, that digital distribution is going to get as, I mean, there will always be people like you and me who always want the Blu-rays, right?
Right.
But
then there's going to be people like me who would rather have it. I want the Xbox Live Arcade model. I'd rather have it to access off of the internet, but I've got the rights to it. I bought the rights to it. Right. I own it.
Yeah.
I just don't have anything physical. And I used to be against that. When Steam came out, I was like, oh, man, who's going to want to buy a game through Steam?
Yeah.
You know, I want the disc. I want the box. I want the manual. I want this physical thing in my hand and on my shelf. And I've grown away from that.
Yeah.
I appreciate the Steam model now. I appreciate the Xbox Live Arcade model.
And, I have a feeling that there are probably more of you out there than there are of us now.
Right. And I mean, I'm on the fence, you know. Like, I like owning stuff for my collection, but I can also understand your point. And I think that as long as it can prove itself to be, like you said, you know, fast, easy, and reliable, that if I do want to go, you know, online and watch something that I digitally bought, that I can access this and do it as quickly and as easily as going to my shelf and grabbing it off out of the box. And as long as they can do that and always be able to do that or promise to me that that's always going to work, then I can see myself converting.
And certainly they've got to manage to do it just as easily as firing up uTorrent and searching for it. And
At the very least.
For free, you know.
At the very
least. They've got to somehow manage to compete with that. They've got to be realistic with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that they've got to make it free or anything.
No.
But they've got to realize who their competition is, and they've got to make it so that you're happy and pleased with the whole experience and the customer service you got and some sort of service that you're getting out of it. Like I said, if they manage my library for me, that's a service they're doing for me, and I could see myself completely buying into that as opposed to, you know, downloading reams of stuff and burning DVDs off and sitting them around on spindles around my living room or whatever. I could see myself really getting into that as a service, and it's win-win. I get something, they get something, they get my money.
Yeah, as opposed to right now where, you know, they don't. you still get something, but...
Yeah. Xbox Live Arcade gets my money.
Yeah.
Speaking of getting things, I think we should move on to our last segment, if you're all okay with that.
Yeah.
Something we would like to get are your comments and questions. So we do have an email set up, which is geekcast@northerngeeks.com. The link will be on the site. If you if you're listening to this episode, you've more likely been to the site and went to the podcast section to the site, which at this point I guess would be up. You know, we haven't done it yet, but once you're actually listening to us say this, more of that. You know, rewinding the time 1 hour, where are we in Japan, type of thing. By the time you're listening to this, the section will be up on the site. There's also going to be if you go to the forum section of the site, there's going to be a new section added to the forum for the podcast. So if there's anything you want to discuss there, I highly encourage you to go and do so. But if you want to send us an email, and once again, I really encourage you to do so as well. If you have questions, comments about the show, if you agree with what we said or disagreed with what we said, send us over an email. Like the email again is geekcast@northerngeeks.com, and that'll be on the site, so you can go ahead and email us from there. And I think that'll about do it for today. Like I said, the last segment of the show is, of course, answering your questions and reading your comments, but this is our first show, so we don't have any yet, which makes sort of sense, I guess. Well, I can comment. Great work, guys. I thought our podcast was amazing.
It was awesome. I think
I have a question. When will be the next one?
In 2 weeks.
There you go. See, our first comment and our first question.
There we go.
So I totally lied before about not having any. So like I said, send us away those emails and those questions, those comments. And I hope you tune in next time for some more Northern Geekery. Once again, I was JF, Darren.
And I'm Brian.
Bye-bye.
Have a great week.